Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
Welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. But for our radio audience here in Mississippi, at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all could be with us. Also, tuning in through our friends at Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music Podcast, we're glad you all could be with us as well. Had a chance to read a book this summer that I know you guys are going to really enjoy. It's by someone that we've gotten to know from the popular group Hootie and the Blowfish. We're excited to welcome Jim Sonnenfeld to our program today. His book is called Swimming with the Blowfish, A Story of Redemption. I want to talk to Jim not only about the writing of the book, what it's been like for him to reflect on his extraordinary life and career, but also the lessons learned that now we're able to share with him as well. If you guys are just now hearing about the book, I will remind you how you can get your own copy of it. Jim, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here and so excited to have a book out on the shelves and, I don't know, be able to tell people the journey that I've been on for quite some time. Really exciting to get it out there.
Yeah. So let's talk about that experience, Jim, for you, because music is how a lot of us, myself included, got to know you. But what has it been like for you now through Swimming with the Blowfish to be able to tell us a story not only about your life before the music, but also what it's been like for you even through the music?
Well, music has always been a journey for me anyway of connections, connectivity of feelings that you hear and what the music causes in your heart. And then becoming a performer, I was sort of born a drummer. At a young age, I was tippy-tapping through everything, and that was in me to begin with. But, you know, joining my first bands and then ending up with Hootie, it was all about connecting with an audience and with each other. The four of us were untrained songwriters, novice for the most part, but had a big desire to get out there. And, you know, it's continued just to be a story of how you interact, how you share stories, because we're nothing if not storytellers along the way, right? We pass it down from our families, and we pass it on to our kids or to others around us. So I enjoyed that process of realizing I need to be connected and stay connected, and music is how I've always done it.
And I think, too, what I love that you've done in this book, Jim, is that you did not shy away from the not-so-perfect parts of this, right? Because even as you were going through your own journey of success, you know, you talked about the challenges as well that you were able to face. What was that like for you, that you find that to be part of the therapeutic aspect of telling the story?
Well, I had a bit of a head start, honestly, and I, you know, if you read the book, there was a corner I had to face in my life in 2004 of acknowledging my basically addiction to drugs and alcohol, and I was powerless, and I didn't like that. But that began a journey for me of really deep self-reflection, using a group around me even and a 12-step model to figure out what made me tick. Who was I? Why did I act the way I did? Why did I drink the way I did to try and feel better? And so I had a dozen years of that journey behind me when I first started writing Swimming with the Blowfish. And I think that's a big head start. I didn't, you know, open up my laptop one day and decide I'm going to write who I think I am. I had a good start of knowing who I was as a man. And I was in my, you know, mid-50s, and that's also helpful, having a little time behind me. I think it's easier to write a reflective book when you're a little older. And I also had the luxury of having written down a lot of stuff that happened along the way and the internet to help me fill in some blanks. Thank goodness for that, because, right, you know, the 90s were great, but they were blurry too.
Gotcha. You say in chapter 28 of the book, Jim, and the chapter is Taking Stock. For those who have the hardcover edition, as I do, it's found on page 191. There, Jim writes this: "My drinking, I came to learn, was merely a symptom of my disease of alcoholism, a twofold illness of the body and of the mind. I couldn't stop the obsession in my mind that told me I could drink successfully, even when there was no evidence to the contrary. And when I put alcohol in my system, it produced an actual physical craving, which made it impossible to stop drinking. If I couldn't drink because of my body, and I couldn't stay sober because of my mind. I was basically powerless over alcohol. This was my problem. So I acknowledged my powerlessness and decided to take the suggestions of other recoverers who'd been able to stay sober, not because anyone told me I had to, but because I saw the evidence that it worked. That, to me, is one of the most powerful passages in the book, Jim. Well, talk to us about that revelation, for one thing, of realizing where hope was and where success was for you in the journey through alcoholism.
Well, how many times in life are we faced with the facts, and we have a choice, a real hard choice, to acknowledge whether we want to accept them and whether we want to make a change for the better. We do it in our diets. I know foods are good for me, and there's others that are horrible for me. I'm faced with that fact. I know it. But what am I going to do? Am I going to make the choice for one food or another? And the same was with alcohol. I finally got in front of a group of people who were able to tell me what my problem likely is, which was similar to theirs, and what they had used as a solution. But I went home and said, do I want this? Or am I going to keep saying, no, I can figure it out. I can do this on my own. So the power was having evidence right in front of me and seeing people who thought and acted like me telling me what they had done. Not what I needed to believe, not even a system of theology, which can be confusing for some. They told me what they did, and I just thought that was so intriguing and overwhelming. There are some, I think at a different time in my life, and I had been faced with people telling me that I was screwing up, there was other times in my life where I had some pretty good evidence and didn't want to accept it, didn't want to face it. And I think that's the ounce of courage I had. I put into trusting that these people in front of me were honest and humble and just wanted to share the message that had worked for them.
Jim, you know the thing that surprised me the most, and this is the first time I'm speaking with you, of course, and I think for a lot of people, as they're reading Swimming with the Blowfish, it's their first real revealing look of you. Of course, we think we know people because we've listened to their music over the years, but what really surprised me, and I definitely want to talk to you about this, is that the question with your mother and your own worth, seeing your value, that conversation really struck me, because people would look at you on the outside and think, well, you know, he has to know he's valuable. He has to know that he has something. What was that conversation like for you to reflect on, to realize your value and to remember your worth?
Well, I don't think I remember before then ever being asked questions like that, just for someone to say, not that you're screwing up or your drinking is out of control or you've had failures. I'd been told that a million times because I was a drunk. But the different angle that this came from was, you know, what do you think of yourself? Or there were deeply sort of philosophical ideas. What value do you put on yourself or the young family that is so important to you in your words? And they weren't questions that I was answering for someone else either. That was the other difference, is that it's a question of that I need to answer for myself. And so I didn't feel like I needed to answer it for someone else, and that alleviated some of the pressure of having to answer to somebody. And I thought, yeah, these are questions I need to answer. I was a 40-year-old man. I wasn't like a 25-year-old kid who maybe didn't know any better or wanted to learn some more life lessons. I should have known, or I should have been able to see some of this coming. And so the self-reflection was an important beginning to saying, I need to answer some of these questions because they are important, instead of beating around the bush or practicing denial. So I did. I sat down for, you know, a series of weeks, and those questions sort of in the back of my mind started getting bigger and bigger and more unpleasant as I realized their truth.
Right. And it's such a great reminder, I think, for all of us. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Jim Sonnenfeld to our program today. You guys know him as part of the group Hootie and the Blowfish, but also as a solo artist as well. We're going to talk to him about the new music. But he's also the author of a great new book. That's what we're discussing right now, Swimming with the Blowfish, A Story of Redemption. We're going to remind you guys so you can get your own copy of the book and stay connected with Jim, too. So, Jim, I want to go to music for a second here, because not only are you releasing a new book, you have the music that's there as well. How has the focus of the music changed for you? You talk about in the book, I think it was in 2012 about music kind of chronicling your own life experience. But how has the music of today, how has it kind of evolved for you?
Well, the evolution happened after I faced and acknowledged my powerlessness over alcohol and drugs. And, you know, that transformation, which honestly took 2 to 3 solid years to get a footing on, you know, it changed my outlook a little bit. And I did get some things in my life. I went through a divorce, which was difficult, and understanding how to be a single father. But when I found love again and was remarried, I started feeling like I was getting some of the gifts that are often promised, you know, when you're trying to transform and humbling yourself to a greater power. And I started getting some of those gifts. It touched my music. I wanted to sing about the celebration because for many years it had been a downward spiral of writing about difficult relationships, failed relationships, self-doubt. And now I was in a place where I could really celebrate. And I hadn't done that. And I don't know if I'd ever done that as a songwriter. So my titles started becoming positive. They started becoming hopeful, pointing towards the solutions, higher power, Jesus specifically in my life. And that's, I enjoyed writing it and it was authentic. But when I realized one day, wait, I've got to go out and perform these in front of people, what are they going to think? I had a moment of hysteria of thinking, are they going to accept this new guy, or do they think he's lost the plot a little bit?
Yeah. And so let's talk about that, because I personally have seen the responses online. But what was that like? Was that a pleasant surprise for you, Jim, to see that people not only connected with the music but celebrated it?
Well, I knew there was an audience of recoverers out there that celebrate in their own words and their lives recovery. And so singing about it, I was a little less sure. I was going to church. I was starting to listen to some contemporary Christian artists and contemporary gospel artists. And I knew it was very positive music because I'd lived it. I'd been overwhelmed by spiritual music in a concert, just driven to tears, just the sheer power of it. So I just didn't know how they'd take the, you know, used to be long blonde-haired drummer of Hootie and the Blowfish standing out in front with a guitar talking about transformation. And it was great. In a different way, Hootie and the Blowfish was exciting, getting in front of 10, 20,000 people and having that massive eruption of joy. This was different. It was smaller groups, but it was a deeply spiritual and moving experience for me all along the way, and it continues to be. That was probably 2010 when I started turning my music to a different way, and I still perform it. The crowds are still small. They're still wonderful, and it's a little bit more of an intimate experience.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the hope for you at this point, Jim, because, again, I mean, I think people would know you in ways that they could not have imagined when they first began swimming with the Blowfish. I didn't personally know what to expect when I started reading it, but it was great to be able to see the history of yourself with music, your passion for sports, but also, you know, being able to get a behind-the-scenes look at the challenges and then, as we were just talking about, the redemption. Could you have imagined if I had told you 40 years ago that you would be writing a book, you know, that would, you know, have people talking? Could that be something that you could have imagined for yourself?
I don't think I could have imagined that in 2015. I was happy going out and speaking to groups about the recovery experience, and I was singing some of my newer music. But a book was not on my radar. I just didn't know I wanted to express myself in that way. And that feeling started coming around. I had a lot of old journals, and I kept every calendar from back to the fall of 1989 when I joined Hootie and the Blowfish. I was sort of had these monthly minders that kept my world organized, at least on paper. And so I went back and started paging through those. We had an anniversary that came around in 2014, and it was the 20th anniversary of our breakthrough album, Crack Rearview, and there was some talk about getting back together, and I think that spurred a little feeling of, you know, maybe I want to go back and look at the importance of of our music, of our band, of in my life. And that's when I started getting out those old journals. And after a few years, it grew into I want to try a book. And I was sort of taught in book writing. I didn't know what I was undertaking exactly, but I had a few mentors in there that were really encouraging, and I had my wife Laura by my side to help me along the way, throwing ideas at her and having to see her response to see if the stories were fun, whether they were intriguing, worthwhile, emotional, any of these things. And she helped me along the way very, because I wrote most of it at home here. And I never imagined, I couldn't have imagined myself doing a lot of the things I do today, writing Christian music or going out and touring and doing bookstore appearances. It's certainly nothing I could have ever predicted.
Yeah. And now here you are, though. And just as you have been able to inspire people through music, now you're able to do it through a different type of message. How does that feel, Jim, to know that regardless of the format may be different. We're not talking about music right now. We're talking about a book, but that you're still able to do something that connects. How does that feel to know that you're still able to leave people with something?
I find it interesting and kind of emotional to hear even you reading some of the segments of the book back to me. So I spent a solid 3 years probably writing on my own, and then worked with a couple editors, which were so valuable to teach me a little bit more about the craft and how to tell a good story. But I haven't until recently read any back or heard people reading segments. And it gives me a little pride. It gives me, you know, like when we make music, we listen back and you're always sort of looking back in joy or a little regret. We should have done it differently, but I listen to my old music all the time. I love doing that, but I haven't considered how the book will feel read back to me. So the words can be powerful. I think the message was intended to be powerful. I want any old person, whether they're a Hootie fan or not, to know that, you know, we're human beings. We have flaws. We have failures, and it doesn't do anybody any good to try and push them down and hide them. We should live our authentic life. And I still read some of these stories that I've written, and it's emotional. Some of the stuff is emotional with my mom's passing and with some of the band stuff. And it's just I've really enjoyed the format. I do hope to write again as well after this book runs its course. I hope to write something afterwards.
Oh, I love that. I love this, and I think this kind of really says a lot about where you seem to be right now, Jim, in chapter 36 of the book. On the road again, you say this: yes, if my life has shown me anything, it's that change is something I better get used to if I want to have peace. It's all happening right in front of me. And I think, you know, whether we're talking about that in 2022 or beyond, I think that's a great reminder for our audience to think about the life in front of us at this point. And that's what's so good about you sharing the story, Jim, through this book and letting people know there's hope. I think there are people who will read this and say, you know, there's hope for me. I have value. I am worthy. And think about what they can still do in their lives, and that's a gift that you've been able to give them. Again, everyone, Jim Sonnefeld has been our guest. The book is Swimming with the Blowfish. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. That's where I got it, or through your favorite local bookstore. If they don't have it, I know they'll be more than happy to order it for you. And, Jim, how can our audience stay connected with you?
Well, I'm fairly active on social media. I have a Facebook page, and I try and keep the positive message out there, talk about the music and the book and where I'll be appearing. And this fall, as I get into my first season with a book in hand, I do plan on visiting stores throughout the Southeast to make appearances. And I like the social media is a good place, Instagram too, and Twitter. I'm just starting to delve into that a little bit, but you know, buying the book and sending me a message and let me know how it impacted you is just wonderful. I love that connectivity of seeing how it's had an effect on people, good or bad. I like to hear the bad stuff too, honestly. I'm not afraid anymore to hear, you know, things that are a little critical. They're helpful to me, actually. But yeah, the social media and my music too. I the music lives large, and I plan on going out to celebrate that with audiences around the Southeast. I get to go to my hometown in the fall of Naperville, Illinois, which is probably one of the further distances I've gone with my book and my music. So that's going to be exciting. And yeah, look me up. I'll be in Iowa in the fall as well. It's just an exciting time. So please connect with me.
All right. We definitely invite our audience to do that. Jim, continued success to you. Really appreciate this time and looking forward to speaking with you again.
Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.
You as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Now let's go make today amazing. Take care.